Talk, Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area right here in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening, and I'm your host, Paul Wearson, together with Susan Franson. And we're starting our show today. By the way, hello, Susan. How are you?
Hello, Paul.
We're starting our show today with Leanne Harder. She's bringing us all the upcoming events and important information from the Story County Report. Welcome back, Leanne.
Good morning. I'm going to start by sharing some recent actions of the Board of Supervisors. Over the past about 8 months, the Story County Board of Supervisors has been working to review and update the county's strategic plan. So a comprehensive plan prepares a county for future growth and development. A strategic plan identifies and prioritizes specific projects that helps us reach that ultimate destination. These projects don't happen overnight, and they can't be accomplished by just one person. It takes careful planning and consideration for each. The county relies on staff, appointed officials, many other entities to help bring these projects to fruition. The Story County Strategic Plan was adopted in October of this year. It identifies the top five goals of Story County, and with each goal, there are objectives, tasks, or action steps, timelines. It identifies who will be responsible for that and that item, potential resources, and sets forth some measurable outputs. It's intended that these projects or goals will help maintain or further enhance the quality of life and economic vitality for Story County and our residents. It was adopted, as I said, in October, and guides decisions from fiscal year 2023. That is June 2023. It seems a long ways away, but when we start budgeting for our stuff right now, we need to be looking long-term, you know, 3 to 5 years down the road. So this current strategic plan focuses on five main areas: quality of life, county operations, facilities and infrastructure, technology, and then last, policy and regulations. All the information regarding the strategic plan, easy for me to say, is on our county's website. And if anyone has any questions, they can contact me. I'd be glad to go out and share information about it. Now on to the Veterans Affairs Office. Yesterday was a supermarket of benefits up on 190th, so I have not heard a report on that, but I just want to share that the VA office is going mobile. They are going out and about to visit communities throughout Story County. It starts really tomorrow and next week. The vets and their spouses in the communities in Nevada, Zeering, Roland, and Story City have quite a bit shorter distance travel to hear about benefits and programs. You do want to make sure to bring a copy of the DD-214. But Wednesday, November 14th at 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., they'll be at the Nevada City Hall. That's at 1209 6th Street in Nevada. Then that afternoon, they'll travel up to Zeering from 1 to 4 p.m. to the Zeering Town Hall at 105 West Main Street. Next Wednesday, November 21st, again from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., they'll be in Roland at the City Hall at 202 East Ash Street. And then Wednesday afternoon, they're going to Story City, and they will be located in the Mary Greeley Medical Center Semler Conference Room at 705 8th Street, and that is from 1 to 4 p.m. Great opportunity to get out and talk to the local VA office right in your own community. This is something they're trying, and I think they have plans to expand after the Thanksgiving holiday. Contact Brett McLean or Aaron Rewerts at 515-956-2626 or 956-2625. Lots of news and programs from Story County Conservation. First main question they have that they want to hear from is, what kind of programs or outdoor experiences do you want? And, you know, do you want programs closer to home at a different time of day? Do you want to learn how to identify plants? Or are you more interested in the family hike? They're looking for input. They've put together a short survey and help them learn about what programs in which you're interested. It does only take about 3 minutes. So it's a worthwhile time of your day. You can find the survey on all their social media outlets, but also on the county's website. And I can get you that link if you're interested. They do have a couple of upcoming events, and all registration for events can be on mycountyparks.com. There are several snowshoe hikes at McFarland Park. Great time to experience snowy trails on snowshoes. And if you've never walked on snowshoes and hiked on snowshoes, it is an amazing experience. They'll talk about how you find the right snowshoe size for you and then learn techniques for enjoying the ancient method of winter travel. December 27th from 10 to 11:30, January 11th from 5 to 6:30 p.m., and then on into February from 2 to 3 p.m. They're all outside, obviously, so dress for cold weather and go ahead and register on mycountyparks.com. And then they're hosting an environmental literature club. It's held at the Weedsfield Co-op Community Room. It's an opportunity to explore nature while you're cozying up with a good book. At 7 p.m. each month to discuss a different book focused on human relationship with the environment. The registration is required, so make sure you check out their website for those dates. But three dates they're looking at right now, January 31st, February 28th, and March 28th. I don't really want to talk about this next topic, but I kind of have to.
Oh, no.
Story County Secondary Roads winter maintenance procedures. It did snow just a little bit last week, and it's cold outside. And when you hear holiday music in the air, too, you start thinking maybe old man winter is coming for a visit. But I do want to take a couple minutes to remind listeners about how secondary roads will be maintained over the winter months and how you can be ready and prepared for winter driving skills set that we all know and love. County roads are maintained to the best of our ability, subject to weather conditions, available equipment, and safety of personnel while trying to keep within the budget. Snow is always placed in the shoulder of a ditch, which may cause accumulations that limit sight distance. As time and resources permit, that snow will be winged back to reduce drifting and visibility. But you have to keep in mind that snow plows and spreaders will normally not be in operation on paved roads between the hours of 7 p.m. and 5 a.m. unless an emergency situation exists. And if you live on a gravel road, that may not be plowed if the wind is causing continual driving. We have procedures regarding private drives, mailboxes, and emergency situations. And if you do see a traffic sign that is missing or destroyed, report it to Story County Sheriff's Office by calling area code 515-382-6566, or if it is an emergency situation, dial 911, of course. There's actually the snow removal ordinance adopted by the board online. It's on the secondary roads page on www.storycountyiowa.gov. And you can refer questions to Darren Moon, our county engineer, at 515-382-7355. And then keeping with that snowing theme, don't forget that snowmobile, ATV, and off-highway vehicle licenses are due December 31st. Story County Recorder Stacy Herridge is available to help you out. Her phone number is 515-382-7230. And we have some upcoming holiday office closures for Story County offices. Next week for Thanksgiving, the day after, Thursday and Friday, most Story County offices will be closed, November 22nd and 23rd. On Monday, December 24th, the offices are closed for Christmas Eve, and then the following day on December 25th for Christmas. On New Year's Day, which is Monday, December 31st, Story County offices actually close 2 hours early, so plan accordingly with that. And then New Year's Day on Tuesday, January 1st, we are closed all day. And then ringing in 2019 is hard to believe. But for more information about something you've heard here or general questions about Story County, we have a wealth of information online on our website at www.storycountyiowa.gov, or you can call or email me at 515-382-7247. Or my email address is lharder@storycountyiowa.gov.
That's a lot of information, Leanne, and I know that everybody out there was trying to write it all down, and they're way behind. And so I'm really glad that you gave your phone number and your website, because they need to access all the things you've said, and you can get it right there at the website or to call you.
You can. And I welcome anyone reaching out to me. I can get you more information. Or if you're part of a group that you want more information, I'll be glad to come talk to your group as well. I also want to thank you, but all of you in the studio and KHOI in particular, for the opportunity for me to come here monthly and do this. It's a wonderful opportunity to reach a different audience. and really help spread the message of what county services are all about. It's a very cost-effective manner for us to do this, my time essentially. And I truly have enjoyed my experience here. I love being part of this group and coming
the
every
local
month.
Talk. You're
the
part
local
of the
talk.
Local talk team,
yes.
Not the team, but our guests.
Yeah.
And
guests.
The service you guys are providing is amazing and well deserved.
Well, Leon, it sounded like you're leaving. You're not leaving.
I am not leaving.
Okay, good. But hey, thanks for the thanks, because we appreciate having you. Because, as Susan says, you're part of our team here, and we want to be a conveyor for information for all the folks who live in the county. And I, too, dread winter driving conditions. And you've probably assuaged some of my fear today. So
thank
you very much.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio. And you've just heard from Leanne Harter of the Story County Report. Her list of upcoming events is in keeping with one of our themes for today, which is how local talk makes us aware of what is happening around here in central Iowa. And one of the things we especially want to make our listeners aware of today is the feature event of our fundraiser, the lecture and discussion with Nicholas Johnson, Media Under Siege, this Friday evening, November 16th at 7 p.m. in the First Methodist Church, 516 Kellogg in Ames. And there will be a reception at 6:30 to meet other people who are going to be there with the same concerns and to get the discussion started even before the lecture. I hope you had a chance to hear Nicholas Johnson's conversation with Ursula Rudenberg in last Friday's show. One of the things that really struck me was when he said that it's the local institutions, public schools, libraries, newspapers, and independent radio that are the most important in democracy. We don't usually think about our level being a key to the future of democracy. It seemed to me that it would be appropriate to take this Wednesday show to feature examples from our area of the ways schools and libraries are adapting to the changes going on around them.
Well, you know, I like that theme, Susan, especially because it gives me an excuse to talk with one of the outstanding teachers at Roland Story, Brad Taylor, who's in charge of FFA, the Future Farmers of America, at Roland Story High School. Brad, I hope you're here.
Yes, I am.
Well, it's an honor to talk to you. And, you know, we're talking today about how in small towns, the newspaper, the library, and the school all interact to guarantee that fabric that makes the community hang together. And I thought that of all the folks who teach at the school, perhaps the FFA is one of the most interactive with the community. First of all, Brad, how long have you been teaching and working with the FFA program?
I've been at Roland Story for 41 years.
41 years? That went fast.
Yes, it did. Yep.
Now tell us about, you've seen a lot of change since the times when you first began teaching and working with FFA. How has the program changed in the time you've been involved?
Well, I think the biggest change, Paul, has come about from seeing more and more of the city or the town kids taking agricultural classes and learning leadership skills through the FFA organization. When I first began in 1978, there were 24 students that were in the agriculture program. And as of this year, there's like 118. And we've seen numbers just skyrocket since that very beginning.
That's fascinating. You know, when I was in high school, there was FFA and there was shop or industrial drawing and art. And I thought, well, I've already done FFA because I'm living on a farm and I've worked my tail off for years. So I took shop. It took me a whole semester to build an end table, which it still exists actually at my farm. So it has been durable since 1957. But tell us about the variety of programs you do. Some of them are very interactive with the community, too.
Yeah, I guess the one that I'm going to talk the most on is about 4 years ago, we were approached by Lando Lakes. Through the Winfield Solutions plant that is in Story City, about would we be interested in partnering with them with a community garden. And we didn't know what we were getting into, so we started off pretty small the first year. And our small garden, which is about 6,000 square feet back then, produced just about 5,000 pounds of produce that we were able to take to Fish and Loaves in Story City. This last year, our garden has basically doubled in size, but our produce has really skyrocketed, that we've donated just about 25,000 pounds this year between four different food pantries through Ames and Story City Rowland area.
And so the students are out there working during the summer when they're out of school, and you have to make sure you have enough people to do that, right?
That is correct. This last year, because we have to keep track of this for Landville Lakes Foundation, we had 329 volunteer hours during the summertime from a variety of students coming out. Along with that, almost 25,000 pounds of produce that was donated.
So look at your impact on the community beyond just your academic efforts with the young people. Now, that's a great interaction, and now you're probably indispensable. You know, that program has to exist.
Yes, absolutely. It's like one of the, you know, it's like one of the things that you always find out is once you start something and it's successful, it basically is continued all the way through. And if it isn't successful, you try to look at it and say, what do we need to do to make it successful?
Well, I think judging by the figures you quoted, there's no question about the success. But I they still wear the blue corduroy coats?
Oh, yes. In fact, just the other night at the school board meeting on Monday night, the seven students or eight students who had went down to the National FAA Convention last month came and made a presentation to the Board of Education, and they all came in wearing their official blue corduroy jackets and white shirts, ties, scarves, pants, and the whole works. And look pretty impressive when they do that.
Well, that's one thing that hasn't changed, because that same uniform was there when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I won't talk about how many years ago that was, but cars had just come out, you know. Well, now, you have so many girls now in the program, don't you, Brad?
Yes, yeah. This year we have 84 FFA members, and I would say that roughly half are females. So the number has gone up. What I find very interesting is we now in the state of Iowa have more female agriculture teachers than we have male teachers.
At the teaching level, the people teaching FFA, it's predominantly women.
Yes, it is.
That is a shock. But, you know, you're way ahead in this equality thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Very soon, Brad, you're going to be a minority as a male teaching FFA, I think.
That is correct. I feel like I'm already there sometimes.
But right now, we need to educate people on the wide variety of activities the kids do. And it's a lot of it's not related to FFA or farming or agriculture per se. I know you talk about marketing and interviewing skills. And just give us a feeling of the tremendous variety of things the students are exposed to in FFA.
Absolutely. And this is true basically of all the schools in our area that offer agriculture and FFA. We're all working at the same thing. That is to give students an opportunity to really excel in leadership skills, which would involve public speaking and doing different community service items. So one of the things that we will take a look at is getting students involved in understanding business management practices. We will look at different types of public speaking and prepared speaking and extemporaneous speaking. There will be parliamentary laws and procedures that students go over. There's even a contest that's right up your alley called Radio Broadcast. And
really?
It just gives students a wide variety of opportunities. And I think that's what the real key is giving kids opportunities to be successful.
Wow. And also, I see, I trace your program by reading The Sun, the thing that comes out every week. And it's full of activities for the FFA programs principally. It's sort of a contest between you and Nevada, who has the more pictures and material. And I know I kid you about that all the time.
Yeah.
But I noticed the students are working with DNA and plant science. Talk about some of the science stuff you do.
Okay. Well, I actually have two classes that we're offering at the high school level for science credits. In the fall of the year, we're doing meteorology, the study of weather. And in the spring of the year, we'll do plant science areas and the aspects of horticulture. And I see that, and I also interject, like, science practice in other classes, because when we start looking at what the current job setting is, so many of the jobs in agriculture require basic science skills for the students to be able to get career or job entry level positions.
So really you're talking about something that interacts with agriculture, but when you talk about interviewing skills and extemporaneous speaking, you're talking about a variety of almost every occupation you could name. So
right.
This is really a hands-on thing that goes way beyond agriculture.
Yeah, and it's, one of the things that I always talk to students and parents about when they come in and want to find out what the program is, that they will be learning transferable skills, so that skills that they learn in this curriculum, they'll be able to use in other curriculums or in future jobs, education, whatever it might be.
Well, now, you also have a carpentry component. There's a lot of shop work that's done here and there. I've seen that pictured in your feature. And tell us about that. The students build things, right?
Yes, they do. In my spring class, it's called an agricultural shop, and it's all on wood projects. And it's basically started because at the middle school, they took out the shop class a number of years ago. So I'm having students, and they'll start as freshman and sophomore level, are doing lots of little projects so that they get used to understanding how to use hand tools as well as power tools, being able to even measure correctly. And then in the fall of the year where we're at right now, I have a class called Ag Mechanics. The students have finished a unit on what we call the engineering process, where they ended up designing windmills and putting together miniature windmills. We did a unit on small gasoline engines, and now they're doing electrical wiring procedures.
Wow. So that's really a compendium of things, an intense variety. And
yes,
tell us, too, about the traditional things. I think you still have FFA boys and girls who have projects for the fairs, right? County
right.
And state fair?
We actually call those our SAE projects or record-keeping type projects that students do. And it's one of the items that for the students who are really looking for opportunities to learn business management, it's a great way for them to have their own learning project that they've customized. They have a passion for it and the learning aspect of it, and they'll keep financial records so that they can go ahead and make business management decisions. And some of the students will then bring their projects to the county and state fair. Some won't do that part, but they're certainly engaged in learning hands-on skills outside of the building.
Well, what really strikes me when we talk about FFA and community is that you're giving students life skills that can be utilized in their work life and in the community. And when you look at your community garden, you're instilling in them the desire and the expectation that they will be doing community service. That's marvelous.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the core values that we really want to emphasize at Roland Story. Much like all the other schools around the area, they all have their certain programs that they're doing just to get students opportunities to excel. And, you know, one of the things that we always look at and kind of kid students about this is I want all students to get a really good paying job so they can afford to pay my Social Security.
That's right. They can relate to that. Let's take care of Brad in his old age. Well, speaking of someone who's already arrived at that plateau, tell him I appreciate that too, because if I live long enough, they'll be supporting me too. So,
absolutely. Yep.
But there's a lot of competition, isn't there, Brad? There's an opportunity for them to compete with members of other FFA entities all over the state. Talk about some of those things that they do.
Well, I think one of the ones that certainly comes to my mind is, I think in terms of the schools right around us, how students at any one of our schools will not necessarily like students at other schools. And I'll use like the Gilbert and South Hamilton. We're very competitive in sports with them, and yet when we go to our national convention trip, we take chartered buses in South Hamilton, and Gilbert are on our chartered bus with us. And kids suddenly see other students from other schools in a different light rather than simply the competitiveness of sports. And they understand that they have similar likes and dislikes and the passions for agriculture and whatever else it may be. And they actually start forming some lasting friendships just because of aspects of working together rather than working against each other in an athletic setting.
Well, you know, that's very, I hadn't thought of that. That's just a very good component of the program. And they're unified by this national organization called FFA. And you know, that is really an opportunity for them to interact. When you look at sports, there's very little actual interaction beyond
right.
the sport itself. Here they have a chance to communicate, to relate to the other folks, especially in the context of competitive relationships in sports, and say, hey, a South Hamilton person doesn't have tails and weird ears. They're like me, you know, and we have a common interest. And I really think that Of all the programs offered by the school, FFA might be the most interactive and crucial to the community. That's my view, based on what I see in the Sun every week. And I think that you and some of the area folks who are involved with FFA at Gilbert and Nevada and various schools, I've noticed that you folks have won a lot of awards. So we must have a program in FFA and all these schools that exceeds expectations and probably compares favorably with programs in FFA all over the United States.
Yeah. You know, I think we're really blessed in Iowa as well as the Midwest about the quality of students that we have. I know some students, you know, have tougher lives than others do, but it's pretty admirable to look at some of these students and see when they come to school how they're able to overcome the baggage that is at home that they have to drag along with them all the time. And I hope that, like FFA and ag programs, as well as other curriculums in the high schools, actually helps those students to see that there is opportunities for them in their futures and what they have to do to overcome their own personal tragedies.
Well, you know, Brad, this is just outstanding. I'm glad we had you on today because people need to know that FFA is not just a narrow agriculture program, that it gives students a variety of life skills, exposes them to a wide variety of things like wiring, carpentry, you name it, and all those interactive things that are necessary like extemporaneous speaking and community service. So Brad Taylor from Roland Story, the FFA department, thanks for being here today. Thanks for enlightening us. And keep up the good work, and I'll be watching who has the most pictures in the Sun.
All right, that sounds great, Paul. Thank you very much.
That's a challenge. Thanks, Brad.
All right.
Thank you. This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Paul's just been talking with Brad Taylor about how the awareness of farming has changed over the years. And I have to say, as he was talking, one of the things that I have been saying for years as I heard about the number of small farms that's going away, that one of the most important things that came out of those small farms was the farm kids. And when we first came here, my husband's first graduate students were from the farms, and they used to say they could fix anything with baling wire. And I started to ask him where the baling wire was now, but basically what they could do was they could figure things out because they had fixed tractors. They had done all these things on the farm. And I thought, now, who's going to teach them that now? And now we know.
Well, I think one of the things I knew growing up was that all my dad and, well, my dad and all his compatriots, fellow farmers, had such a variety of skills. They had to understand marketing, animal husbandry, agriculture and all its forms of growing crops. And they had to understand so many things about mechanics. And they did fix things, we said, with bubble gum and baling wire.
So. Okay, so you had a little broader vision than ours. And by the way, one of the skills that you have learned is how to publicize things. And we need to talk a little bit about our fund drive here at KHOI because this is what keeps us on the air. And
yeah, this is a membership drive week. And, you know, we're having a lot of special events, live performances here at the studio. And also, of course, we're talking during broadcast time about the need to raise funds to support our community radio station. And when you look at life in Ames and the surrounding area, we're proud of a lot of community things that really enhance life here. We have an excellent library in Ames. We have so many things we can point to that are unique to Ames or Central Iowa. Of course, all the advantages and cultural events and athletic events at Iowa State. And one of the more unusual things is right here at this location, KHOI Radio. Everyone here is a volunteer. We only have about 2 paid staff people. And like any enterprise, we have electricity to buy, rent to pay, and all the things that go in terms of maintaining our really up-to-date, state-of-the-art equipment here for broadcasting, and that's costly. So we ask folks out there who love listening to us to invest in the fact that we need to continue. And there are ways to do that. First of all, A basic membership here is $55 a year, which works out to 15 cents a day. When you talk about broadcast time and the existence of KHOI day to day, a premier membership is $100 a year. Sustaining membership, $21 or more per month, or $250 per year. Now, how can you donate? Well, first of all, we'd love to have you walk here and here at 410 Douglas, right across from the Octagon, and see our broadcast facility and just see what we do here and know where we are. And you could bring a check in. That would really be nice. Or you can go to our site, KHOIFM.org, and that would be where you could press the donate button and donate the amount of money you choose. Or call us. Our phone number here is 515-292-2878. And that means that you have a variety of ways to contribute and to make sure that KHOI continues to exist. So please donate to our cause this week and during this Predator Drive and make sure that KHOI continues. We love our listeners and value our audience, and we hope you value us too. And you can do that by contributing to KHOI and being a member of our illustrious group.
And there's another thing, though, that goes even beyond that. And I was thinking about that in connection with democracy, because, of course, we really make a big effort to educate our listeners. And by educate them, I mean talk to them about things that are going on around them that would enrich their lives. Everything from musical performances to the latest thoughts about protecting air and water. And that is something that we need to be effective. We need to have listeners. The members we really need. But I think that if people are listening, they know why it's important to become members. So tell your friends.
Well, I think that that's a very good thing to remember, Susan, because there are a lot of things you get here at KHOI that aren't available elsewhere. We all love public radio and our other radio outlets, but KHOI is unique in that everyone here is participating for the love of the game. And so we're all volunteers here, and you can be a volunteer here, too. Stop by. There are people who just walked in the door like Aladdin, our engineer. We were in a meeting one day, and Aladdin walked in and said, I want to work here. I want to play here. I want to volunteer here. And here he is, this handsome young lad, and he's a professional engineer now. Well, that's great. So contribute to KHOI, and this is KHOI FM 89.1 Story City, Ames and surrounding area.
Well, because we are inviting people in, we have the next program that we will play for you, introduce you to. Here at KHOI, we devote a lot of time and energy to the issues of ecology, to preserving the air and water. So it wasn't surprising that Luke Grand, certified forester and owner of Prudentera, which you'll hear about a little more in a few minutes, sent us an email last week announcing his latest project with grade school kids. I invited him and a couple of his co-workers to come into the studio right after they finished their day on the land. Let's listen to how they describe this unusual educational experience. Luke's colleagues were Amy Zabrodsky, a student at ISU considering a major in forestry, and Pete Eglund, trails professional for his company, Legacy Trails, LLC. You'll hear them all in this conversation.
My name's Luke Gran. I live southeast of Nevada in Story County. And I own a company called Prudentera, which helps people who own land in Iowa. We plan, plant, and manage conservation land in Iowa. So people's forests or prairies, wetlands, streams. And we empower landowners. So we give them information and education and then strategically restore their land using native plants and ecosystem restoration concepts that I picked up at Iowa State University back in early 2000s when I was in school here. So it's kind of an interesting Story County story. I'm a small business owner, employ about five people, part and full time, and then about a crew of five, mostly students from Iowa State in forestry and other natural resource management areas. And twice a year, I just try to give my knowledge away for free to children in the community who are public school students who might not get a chance at home or in school usually to get exposed to these concepts, because I want to grow a future generation of people to replace me when I stop doing forestry. And I feel like if I volunteer a couple times a year, I can at least do something to tactical, you know, and direct that hopefully invites more people to follow these concepts in their lives. And whether they become foresters or own a home or own land or a farm, hopefully they'll take some of these concepts with them throughout their lives.
Do you work with the public schools?
Yeah, so I've reached out for several years to try to find a good connection with public school folks, and they're just so busy. You know, they just have so many testing and all the things that public school teachers have to do. So it took a few years to develop the right connections. You know, I tried high school, middle school, elementary school, and then I got a connection with a first through fourth grade level instructors at Nevada Central Elementary School. And they've just been so supportive, and their teaching goals are very much in line with ecosystem restoration, adaptive management fundamentals that we've been trained in. So it's a really good fit. These kids are really young, and they're first through fourth grade is not the first place I thought of reaching out to, but it's been really, really effective. Kids that are that young tend to be really open-minded, and they're really curious about the natural world, and they aren't afraid of it yet, like many older students are, and they're willing to try new things. So it's a really fun thing to get to do. Hopefully I can do it twice a year in the spring and fall and give kids a chance to get outside and have a positive experience in nature with adults.
And how was this organized? You are a forester,
right?
That's what does a forester do in Iowa?
Yeah. Why do we have foresters now? We don't have any forests in Iowa. That's a common thing I hear about a lot. And boy, we sure do. You know, it's these tiny little areas along streams where it's too steep to plow, where it's too hard to access with cattle. There's these tiny little areas. You know, we have about 3 million acres in the state. And you get to the eastern part of the state and the southern parts of the state, southeast, you know, towards the Mississippi River, and there's a lot of forest, you know. So, you know, in Story County, we often, being so dominated by corn and soybean production, it's not typically the place you'd think to have a forestry restoration company. But there's so much forestry to do in Story County. It's just tremendous, mainly helping people understand how to plant new shrubs and trees. There's a huge need to plant more trees. A lot of our oaks are starting to become overmature and die. So it's critical we get new trees planted. We have very dense forests that are left in Story County and around central Iowa, and they're too dense. They're more dense than they were historically in the 1800s. And they're full of now invasive species as well. So invasive shrubs such as honeysuckle, autumn olive, buckthorn, major threats to the diversity of woodland wildflowers. So there's a huge need to educate people in this part of the state and around the state to understand these threats and understand what to do to make the land better.
I heard about an opportunity to head out with some, like, first and second graders and teach them about the woods. And I just heard the name, like, Junior Forester, and I was hooked. I was like, this sounds like so much fun. So it was a really fun activity.
And what grades did you say this?
This is just first grade this year. Yeah. This fall, just, you know, we asked all the first through fourth graders, and all the teachers felt really overwhelmed with their other school to stuff, and this is just extra work, you know, for them. And so one of them stuck with us for another thing this fall, and the other one's probably going to get involved in the spring or next year. But yeah, we decided to come up with a fun activity for 23 first grade students from Central Elementary School, one classroom, and worked with the teacher Kedra Hamilton there, and we came up with something that was on point for their learning objectives and their priorities, their theme for the year. And you know, we get to just pluck through my client relationships and projects we do locally, you know, and say, okay, would this be a good fit? Would that be a good fit? And we put a project together looking at a urban woodland slope that was restored this year. An Ames resident named Jeanette LaGrange invested in a really creative restoration of her degraded woodland slope near her garage and house in the Brook Ridge neighborhood. And Pete was involved in that. He designed the trail and retaining wall portions and supported the efforts designing the work there and doing it. So we wanted to kind of show and tell a little bit at that site and show them what adults came up with, show these 22 kids what adults came up with. And we taught them about trail construction. We taught them about how to plant live stakes, which is a special type of planting that foresters use. It's really low cost and does a good job. And then bare root shrub plantings, which is another forestry technique using small bare root stock rather than container shrubs that are more expensive and larger. So they got to do that in the morning, and then in the afternoon we said, all right, now it's your turn. You're going to get to explore this land of a classmate. We found a classmate of theirs whose parents allowed them to, you know, invited them to come to the land, look it over. It's about a 6-acre woodland south of Nevada. And they got to work together in small groups of about 8 with an adult leader of each group. And they came up with the groups. So one group was focused on the community. What land management could the landowner do to improve the community? What could the landowner do to clean up the woods? Because there's a bunch of metal. Iowa has a long history of dumping trash in woods, you know, and this site was no different. Mm-hmm. And then beauty. Kids wanted to know what we could do to make the land more beautiful, make it more flowerful and a bit more pretty plants. And then wildlife. They were curious what we could do to make the land better for wildlife, for home and food and space for critters. And then fun. They wanted to figure out what we could do to make this land more fun. So Pete led the fun group and Abby led the beauty group. And we had a next door neighbor volunteer who owns land adjacent to the property volunteer to do the wildlife group. And we had the Prairie Rivers of Iowa staff member Dan Haug volunteered to lead the community group, which is perfect for him, you know, because that's what his job is to help people in this area learn how to improve water quality and soil erosion for the whole community.
Well, we've heard from you, yeah. But the other foresters I would like to hear from. Abby?
Well, it was really cool. I led the beauty section, I guess. And I was there with a parent and another, I think, landowner who was nearby. And it was just so cool, like, watching the kids kind of come up with their own ideas about how they would manage the forest, you know? Like, in our classes, we learned certain ways that you're supposed to manage the forest and what has historically worked. But, you know, I got some new ideas from the young kids that I would have never came up with.
For example?
Well, one of the kids said, we were talking about flowers, and she was talking about how her and her mom garden all the time, so she should just garden, like, all over, and just plant a bunch of really cool, like, native flowers, being blown away by facts that we told them. Like, when we told them that, like, a wildfire, a low-intensity one, wouldn't kill the big oaks, they were all just blown away by that, and so it got me more excited, too. And I'm like, oh, let's start up burn season, you know? Let's do what we need to do. So,
did anybody talk about the fires in California?
We did. And the kids were curious about why, like, a fire here, like a low-intensity fire here would be good when there was, like, such crazy stuff. And some of the parents, too, were kind of confused by that, who I was with. And we kind of had to explain that, like, out in California, there's a buildup of fuel and that's causing crazy, crazy wildfires. But as long as, like, we have a good prescribed burn here, it's very beneficial for the land in many portions necessary.
Pete, what did you do today?
And although Luke said I led it, I would say that he led it because I was standing up top of this bank trying to get the kids to figure out what we could do that would be fun there. And Luke's like, hey, let's go down into the woods and check this out. And I was looking at it at the top from a parent perspective and an insurance perspective, and I was like, I don't know. But that was probably the best thing that we did because then they found all kinds of stuff to climb on. And so what we learned is that there's not really much that could be done to make it more fun except for maybe providing some access to the spot and then, you know, maybe clearing out some of the dangerous debris. The old car that has Lord knows how many animals living under it and the sheet metal and buried washers and, you know, stuff like that.
Was it a steep hillside?
It was very steep. Probably 80% slope or more.
Nobody used it for a slide.
Well, not intentionally. We were sliding on the leaves, but, you know, using small saplings to work our way down the hillside and then go across the hillside. So
yeah.
You've just heard about how even first graders can learn the basic concepts of land restoration when taught by the imaginative adults who work with Prudenterra, a company dedicated to restoring native Iowa ecosystems. Next, we'll visit the public library in Colo, Iowa. 2016 population of 852. It's the story of adaptation to the changes taking place in rural Iowa.
I'm Joni Jamison. I've been the library director here since 2000, and I started working here in high school back in 1986.
How has the library changed since you were in high school?
Well, when I first started working here, my main job was to type and file the card catalogs, and we no longer have a card catalog. We do, however, it's, you know, automated and on the computer, so we don't actually have the physical cards anymore. And when I first started working here, I walked in and wasn't certain how to type them because it was a manual typewriter, and I had been taught on electric typewriters, so I wasn't even certain how to use the manual typewriter. So now we don't even have the card catalog. We no longer have the typewriter. At that time, we did not have a computer. Shortly after I started working here in the 80s, we got a computer, and now we have almost 10 of them. We did not have DVDs when I started, and now we have DVDs and Blu-rays. Download was not a word I really even heard of. And now you can download magazines, books, some videos. It's amazing how much has changed in 30 years.
And are hardcover books much less used?
That's interesting. A lot of people still prefer to read an actual book, hold an actual book compared to downloading. And I do both. I would prefer an actual book. However, I have downloaded, you know, onto a Kindle or some sort of tablet. However, even though I don't care to download a book, I do like to download audio and listen to a book. So that's something that's changed as well.
And can people download these and take them home, or do they have to listen to them in the library?
No, they download them. I download the audio right onto my phone. And so if you're out walking or driving in your car or something, you have it right there with you. And the tablet or Kindle or whatever device you have, it downloads onto that, and you can take the device wherever you're going. So a lot of people who travel like that.
And how does this, do people come into the library for other things than getting a DVD or getting a book?
Well, I don't like it when I hear that, oh, everyone has a computer, everyone has internet at home. It's amazing how many, and I'm talking adults, come in and use the library's computers and our Wi-Fi and our printer. A lot of people might have a computer at home, but they don't have a printer. So, yeah, they do utilize the library other than just checking out items.
Well, you told me that today you had an after-school program.
Yes.
So do you have many of those kinds of programs?
We have an ongoing K through fourth grade after school program on Mondays. We have a preschool story time every Thursday evening. We have coffee and conversations the first Friday or second Friday, excuse me, of every month for adults. We have ongoing different programs for different ages. So,
and do you have a book sharing program with other libraries in the area?
Not books, but we do audio. So we exchange audio, like books on CDs.
How do you feel that the library has changed its role in the community since you started in high school?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of businesses on Main Street here have closed, and so we are one of the few things remaining, and so we're kind of like the hub of the town. If you want to know what's going on and things, we get a lot of phone calls. When is trick-or-treating? Stuff like that. A lot of kids after school, you know, come and just kind of hang out because it's really the only place to do something like that.
Well, then it's more important proportionately than it used to be.
If you look at it that way, absolutely, yes.
Now, I see that the library is on one side of the building, a newish building that you're in. Is it, when was this built?
This actual building was in the 70s, and in 1992, that used to be the fire station where we're currently located, and they remodeled it into the library, and the fire station got a new department there. So.
And on this side where we're sitting now is the community center.
That is correct.
And what does that mean? I see, you know, the television set and the refrigerator.
Right. People can rent this out. It's through the city, and it's just a community building that people can utilize for special occasions.
You have a high school and a grade school. Is that right?
Colonesco School District is Zeering. North of here is where we have our preschool through fourth graders, and then the fifth through 12th grade are in the Colo building here.
Do you work with the schools at all?
Yes, we do. We're always doing activities for, actually this Thursday they have literacy night, and I will be there at a table for them for that, promoting some of the activities and services that we offer.
You've seen a lot of changes in the library. What do you foresee?
I foresee that more and more will be online, more and more books, more and more magazines, everything. Whether or not that's good or bad, I don't know. I think we'll get to the point even where story time is going to be online. You just be able to go online and almost do anything and everything you want. And for some reason, and I don't know if I agree with this, but that younger generation like that, I mean, if you look at Amazon, and I mean, you can order anything and everything you want online. So,
well, you do pay for it.
This is true. This is absolutely true, yes.
And, of course, the other thing is that I guess you don't quite have the kind of story times when children climb up on your lap, but that is the one-on-one human contact in connection with a book or with a story is something that is very precious.
And maybe that will never go away because of that. So, and hopefully that's the case because story times are very, and they do climb into our laps and things. And not only with the connection with the librarian, there's also that connection with the other kids at story time.
And you still have it?
Yes, we do. We have it once a week.
Well, that's just very good to know what's going on in public libraries, not only in Colo, but I'm sure all over the state of Iowa, and how they are maintaining the glue and the connectedness that makes small towns still viable in our state. Well, tonight here at KHOI, the studio itself on 410 Douglas, it's the last Pantorium session of the 2018 season. Tonight, the 14th, Central Iowa singer-songwriter Andrew Hoyt will be performing right here at KHOI. He'll be doing a broad variety of 70s, 80s, jazz, modern, and original music on the ukulele, an instrument that he discovered when he went to when a friend brought it back from vacation, probably from Hawaii, and he couldn't put it down. The ukulele, we remember Arthur Godfrey back in the 50s who played the ukulele. So tonight, 7 o'clock, Andrew Hoyt performing right here at KHOI Studios, 410 Douglas. It'll be right here in the lobby at the historic Pantorium building, 7 to 8 tonight. The shows will be live broadcast also on KHOI and available in our online archives. But please join us here in person to celebrate the amazing musicians that call the heart of Iowa home. It's Andrew Hoyt performing tonight. Music from the 70s, 80s, jazz, modern, and original music. All on the ukulele.
Before we leave today, I just wanted to give a little follow-up from last week's program with Suzanne Zilber about the post-Kavanaugh workshop, because it was small but tremendously successful, and I wanted to read, and at least one of the participants found out about it through our program. So we were pleased about that, and this is what Suzanne emailed us to report. Participants shared a variety of emotions and perspectives on how the Kavanaugh hearings impacted them. I was most gratified to see them make new connections as some went to lunch afterward or kept talking about the event. The participants stated that the workshop created the space they were needing, and some made a commitment to continue the conversation with others in the spaces of their usual lives. And I personally heard from a participant who was so happy that she had had this chance to talk to other people. You have been listening to Local Talk, HOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Susan Franzen, together with Paul Wearson. Thank you for listening. Other voices you heard were Leanne Harder, Brad Taylor, Luke Gran, Abby Zabrodsky, Peter Englund, and Jody Jameson. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and noon. Today at 7 p.m., you will be hearing Andrew Hoyt at the Pantorium, our live broadcast.
Hey, today's show was engineered by Aladdin. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris. That's from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you right here. And come and join the Local Talk team. Stay tuned now for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. Morning masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. And now, let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878 or email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to our contact page of our website, khoifm.org. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Now, thank you for listening again. We'll see you again
on the radio. And don't forget that donate button.